And I'm going to use this expansion, which is a kind of asymptotic expansion derived by Nancy in 1993 in order to get some estimate on the problem of, I guess, of some interest, namely of interpolating to Hamiltonians. And again, I'm sorry for my ignorance on this subject, so I hope that it at least of some interest to me here. So let me explain what Nancy expansion is. In all previous approaches which you consider today, people looked at the essentially at the evolution of the state, so in other words, at Schrödinger picture. What I'm going to do is to look at Heisenberg picture. And it has certain advantages to look at the Heisenberg picture rather than Schrödinger picture, so let me explain what I mean. So you start with the initial value problem, which looks like that. You want to solve the differential equation of the type I rho dot, where rho is the say density matrix, so think about the projection, spectral projection as initial value for rho. And here it's time dependent, and so here appears h of s, rho to of s, where h of s is the relevant Hamiltonian, which can be time dependent. And it's initial value problem, so in other words, I fix the initial value of rho of tau at zero to be some rho naught, and convenient choice once you consider this adiabatic setting is to choose rho naught in spectral projection. Of h at time zero. And again, what I have in mind is the following interpolation problem. So at time zero, or to be more precise, at any time which is less than zero, you have an Hamiltonian H naught, and let's call it Hi. And then there is a final Hamiltonian HF, and then in the course of the evolution which takes place, the physical place, per time which it takes its tau, and in the scale picture, the scale time is going to be of this size. So this is h dependence, roughly speaking, is it's the time dependence of the Hamiltonian, and I guess it's zero somewhere. So this is zero, and this is time one. So I start to evaluate the initial system hi at time one. I will write to the final Hamiltonian hf. So in other words, this is an interpolation problem between hf and hf. So hf is some path in the Hilbert space between hn and h. So I will specify this path later on. It's not going to be just linear interpolation. I don't need to do it a little bit more sophisticated in order to have better result. So, but let me go back to the problem. So here you have this matrix rho to of s, and you're trying to, so notice that the big difference between the Schrödinger evolution, in other words, between, let's say that rho is initially is just a single state psi naught psi naught. So just for completeness, think about rho naught being psi naught psi naught. Then rho to of s is nothing else but psi tau at time s, psi tau at time s, where psi tau is just a solution of the Schrödinger equation. In other words, psi tau dot is equal to tau h axiom psi tau, right? So one thing which you see, which simplifies things a bit, when you look at the Heisenberg picture instead of the Schrödinger picture, that the question of phases disappear from the picture. And it's, of course, a stick which has two ends, right? So one end is that what I'm going to talk about makes, so this will make the expansion very simple in some sense, so everything will be explicit. But you lose something. Namely, you can't retrieve the face, which comes with, for example, Derek face, which comes with adiabatic evolution. But as far as questions like transition probability is concerned, then you don't really care about the face, right? So if you just want to know that the transition, the adiabatic evolution up to the face is correct, up to the certain order, then it doesn't really matter how the face is organized. Right? Okay, so what Nancy did in 1993, he proposed to consider the, as always, the asymptotic expansion. So rho of S will be a sum, J runs from U, well, I shouldn't write that way. So it will be asymptotic expansion, so let me just write it's as asymptotic equality. So rho to, which we want to look for, is will be of the form B0 of S plus 1 rho to B1 plus 1 rho to squared B2 of S and so on. So, so this is really same context as the one which is George presented this morning. But the claim is that you can get explicit formulas for big J's. So let me explain where those formulas come from. And maybe by then I will have time to just prove it for you. So, and then of course there is a question how you make this asymptotic, what you have to do with this asymptotic series in the sense that you have to stop them somewhere. It's also something which George mentioned, but I'm going to be more concrete about it. Okay, so one thing which is also going to be clear is I can differentiate both sides, right? And then I get equation rho to dot. Let me also put the I sign should be equal to I B0 dot S plus 1, well, 1 over 2 B1 dot S and so on. And now, on the other hand, we know that rho to I rho to dot should be equal to to commutator of H of S with rho to of S. And this, if you compare term by term in to series, then you need to arrive to the following equation.
Alex, yes. If you write this expansion here, do you really mean that the bees do not know about
at all? So that's actually a funny thing, and that's why the adiabatic evolution is so powerful too, because there is at least formally there is no history term in this expansion. And of course, if you want to cut the series somewhere, then you have to add the history. So there is another remark. Obviously, there will be some constraints in order to satisfy this condition, but I am going to describe. So what you get is the following equation, equation for B of J. Here appears Bj minus plus 1. So let me call this equation star. So this is condition which is just related to the compatibility of the expansion with the differential equation. But if you look at this equation, it's not difficult to see that the solution is not linear. So the solution of the hierarchical relations is not unique. And why it is not unique? It's also related to something that George mentioned. So notice that if I add to bj plus 1 of s anything which commutes with h of s, it will not affect the right-hand side. So in other words, I have this freedom of diagonal term in the energy basis. And observation of Nancy was that you can correct this problem of ambiguity in the equation by noticing the following fact: rho 2 of s is a projection. Rho naught is a projection. Right? So if you start this projection, it's easy to see that. If you start with psi naught and psi naught, as they say, rho naught, well, it doesn't really matter. It can be actually projection of infinite dimensional projection. The Heidinger evolution of the projection gives you projection, always, right? So, and what is the nice property of the projection? It's that its square is equal to itself, right? So if you square rho 2, I'm getting rho 2 of s back. Yes?
I was just wondering, the initial condition for the b, is it b0?
Right, so you see, I'm going to, in order to have it, it's a, so the question is how much I can push it frozen and frozen, right? And it's very related to the smoothness at this point. And well, this point is not important. What is important is how you start, right? And the point, so I have to start extremely gently in order to get this expansion. So, but I'm going to describe. So in other words, in addition to the differential equation, which rho is supposed to satisfy, it should satisfy this algebraic equation. And now what you can do, you can just square both sides and compare powers of two, right? So, and then it's not difficult to see that this, if I just square this sum, it's not difficult to see that you obtain the following relation. So bj of s is equal to the sum m runs from 0 to j minus 1. And here appears bm of s bj minus m. So this just comes from the fact that, let's say, if I'm interested on the left-hand side in the power 1 over 2 to the j, then because I square this term, the pairs, the cumulative power of the pairs will enter. And therefore, the sum of the indices should be equal to j. Right? Okay, very good. So this is another equation which I need. Let me call doubles. Now the claim is that this two condition determine dj plus dj. So actually, I'm going to write down the expression for j now. And if time permits, I will try to just pull the j. From these two conditions, you can extract the following information about the j's. So namely, b0 as expected, b0 of s is just rho of s, so this is a spectral projection of h of s, which corresponds to rho naught of s. So there are many different spectral projections, but this one should be a smooth continuation of rho naught in time. And in addition, I have to write the general formula, so I will write the recursive formula for BJFS. So the formula goes like that. Bj is equal to 1 over 2 pi integral over contour gamma, and it's going to be the same integral which was described by in the previous talk. And what appears here is a term which is going to
this is the trivial operation of this one.
That's absolutely right. And this is what, let me make one point here. So if you think a bit about this term is off diagonal in respect to the projection rule. So in other words, this term looks like rho something rho bar. And as I said before, this equation alone, where was it? The equation stuck does not tell you anything about the diagonal part. So I have to add something. I have to add the diagonal. So diagonal part look like that. SJFS and minus twice rho fs SJFS rho fs. And I have to specify what S of J is. So S of J here. Is equal to a sum m runs from 1 to j minus 1 of bn of s, bj minus n of s. So in other words, if you look, I'm careful here, the difference between two sums is that you want to avoid the bj terms, right? So notice that in this sum, the unary product of bj is bzu. And I have to avoid it because I want to write the recursive trilogy. Okay, so that's definition of SG. Okay, so if time permits, I will just prove this for you. But let me first show you how it can be used in order to say something about this particular problem. But first of all, I need to fix the error term. Right? So this is not due to Nancy, it's our joint work with Jeff Schenker. So error can be actually computed. So by error, I mean what happens if I stop after the end step in this expansion. So so it's turned out that there is a neat way to write the error term. Rho 2 of s turn out to be equal to the following. So it will be a sum, j runs from 0 to say n, and bj of s divided by 2 in power j. And then there will be error term. This error term can be written in the following fashion. It's 2 in power j, notice that, 2 in power n. Notice that it's not 2 in power n plus 1, it's kind of fun. It's just you lose one power. It's the same story as George was telling again. And then here is the integral from 0 to s of u to s t b n dot u to t s computed at this time t v. So there is some only one object which I didn't describe yet. So u to st is a physical evolution from time t to s. But for all practical purposes, all you need to know about u to as an operator is that it's a unitary operator. That's so why is it a neat way to write it? Because it immediately gives us an estimate on the error. Right? So now I can compute the error. So Well, actually, before I'm doing that, let me do something else. So given two Hamiltonians, HI and HF, I want now to construct the family HS, which will interpolate between these two. So in other words, I want to choose HS, which is equal to H final when S greater or equal than 1, and equal to H initial. Let me, actually, just to make things slightly simpler, let me choose the initial point minus 1, not 0. So it doesn't change much. And so this guy should be HI when S more or equal than minus 1. Okay, so I want to choose a family which will be extremely smooth. And the one way to do it is the following. So let's construct the function f of s in the following way. F of s will be a function which is equal to 0 if s absolute value is greater or equal than 1. And it's going to be equal to e in power minus 1 over 1 minus s squared if s absolute value is small. So the graph of this function looks like that. Right? And notice that all derivatives at point minus 1 and 1 actually vanish. So it's a nice, very smooth function. It's this function belongs to so-called Jevrek class, which means the following fact that the nth derivative of function f is bounded by some constant in power n, which is not very important. What is important for us is bounded by n of the square. So one can actually find another examples where you can reduce the power of the n factorial to as close to 1 as you wish. And so, but for all practical purposes, this example will do. And then I can construct the function g of s, maybe g of s is not good, so h of s, which will be just integral from minus infinity to s, f of t dt. So in other words, if you start with a bound function, then clearly the graph of this function, so this is f, and then graph of the function h, you look at this is going to be function this form, right? And the value here is not 1, but well, you just normalize it in such a way that the value will be 1. Okay? And again, this function has the same property, so also the derivative of h bounded by the same. And now I just construct my family h of s in the following fashion, so let me just remove it. It's going to be h initial multiplied by h of s plus h final hs. And by construction, this h of s is extremely smooth, namely h and the derivative is just bounded by the same boundaries. So one is here, so the s derivative up to the constant in norm smaller than c bar n, and then n to l. That's what's going to be important. Okay, so now let's look carefully at bj. Because I'm going to estimate bj in terms of the gap, right? So I have to do some formal power counting. How the bj behaves as a function of the gap. So notice that there are two sources of getting power of gaps greater and greater as you increase j. So one source is, notice that in this operation, you basically multiply this object by two resolvents, and you integrate over the z value, right? So this operation adds one power of the gaps, right? Because each rz, formally speaking, behaves like 1 over gap. Right? So, similarly, this guy is 1 over gap. Similarly, this guy, because like one we get about the integration is the one factor of g, and therefore you end up with one factor of one over g. Right? And on the other hand, there is a derivative. And it's easy to see that each derivative also brings one power of one over g. Right? So think about, for example, projection. It doesn't matter. So notice that, for example, if you want to compute b1, then what will appear here is b0, and b0 is equal to the spectral projection. And as we talked today, the rho dot of s formally behaves like one with a gap. To be more precise, it's h dot, but we know that h dot is bounded by the constant. So I know that each derivative brings one power of the gap, one over gap, and then the resolvent brings one power of the gap. So trust me that formally, well, not formally, it's a formal power constant, but it's a correct power constant, bj of s behaves like 1 over gap in power 2j. Now, how much time do I have? A couple of minutes? Now, I want just to know when I want to stop the expansion. Right? So notice that since I have this factor of g in power 2j, and bj is affiliated with the factor of 1 over 4 to the j, it means that I want to work in the domain where I want to look at the regime where tau g squared is equal to epsilon, and epsilon is minus 1. So, and epsilon is a small number. Mm-hmm. So then I formally getting the following result. Once you start to look at this summation, then you get the series which behaves so the arrow behaves like 1 over 2, epsilon 1 plus, the first term gives me already epsilon plus epsilon squared plus epsilon cubed plus epsilon to the 4 and so on. But of course, it's not precise. Why it is not precise? Because, first of all, when you just differentiate, say, projection, because of the this, you know that the nth derivative of the Hamiltonian runs as n factorial squared, right? So it's going to, once you take many derivatives, it's going to give you a factor of n factorial squared. But there's another source problem, namely when you start to differentiate this term, you get a bunch of terms, right? So if you want to estimate them together, you have to also count the combinatorics of these terms. So trust me that actually you can bound this guy by the sum epsilon in power n, and here appears n factorial in power 4. And then the error term, notice that the error term has a structure that there is an extra derivative, which means that the error term is estimated, I'm almost finished, as epsilon power n multiplied by 1 over the gap. So now you want to choose, and there's n in factorial power 4. And so if you optimize with respect to epsilon, and n, you get the result that this is smaller than e power minus epsilon in power 1 quarter, and this implies that error the tau, which is behaves like 1 over g squared log 1 over g 4, so in other words, if you choose tau to be of this size, then the error will be smaller than any precision vector. I mean, there's a precision vector which I didn't mention, but thank you so much. Thank you.
starting a discussion section now, but maybe we have a question or two for the speaker.
That's cool.
Is this something we were making a big fuss about before here? Maybe it's like a definitive demonstration. Nothing your name's being said.
I mean, I think this optimization over N must be very important, because I was thinking before that when you had this tau over GQ, or 1 over tau GQ, that if you ignored that, I mean, in a situation where the gap could be changing, it's an asymptotic expansion. It wouldn't,
you can trace this GQ here, actually. You see, if you stop at n equal to, I guess, 1, then you get extra. So b1 is easy to check with, because like 1 over gap squared. Now you take a derivative and it gives you 1 over 2b. But the point is that if you continue this expansion, then you gain, because the tau g squared is a small number, but the equation, so it kind of fight between the small number in power n and factorial, right? So now we want to optimize between this thing and this.
Let's see if I understand. So you get 1 over tau g squared each time, except for the last one, where you
right.
get extra g.
Right, right. That's why, you see, that's why it's a log g. Not log data, which is error, but log g data. Mm-hmm.
Do you know that this can't be improved? I mean, do you know some example where you need tau to be this?
I don't have, and I actually would believe that it's probably, I mean, this is definitely true, but the question is how much you can improve on that. I mean, I don't know, and I doubt that you can do much better than it means that you can avoid this long list.
Any other questions?
I mean, is delta completely arbitrary?
Yes. So once, so the delta is just error, right? So once. Depending on error, right? So if you want, so I guess in all previous talk, delta was 1. But if you want to keep track on the error, so in other words, you not only want to show that adiabatics are false, but you also want to know that the error is more than given number of delta, then you have to count for that.
Do you have an idea what is the pre-factor?
I mean, you can figure because the only parameter which is left is this C, which sits in front of the Asian problem. But this is the only parameter. All other stuff should be.
Thank you very much.